Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
Welcome. It's Friday, the 19th of January, the year 2018. You're probably writing that on your checks by now, I think. Got that figured out. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill, and glad to have you along. Looking forward to a good day ahead. We've got a good show just coming up here in the moments ahead. Every other Friday, we visit with Alex McFarlane, apologist and theologian. Talk with him here in the second half hour. And Carmen LaBerge, who was filling in yesterday, is going to join us here in a few minutes. And we'll talk about a variety of things, including a little bit of football. Not that, you know, she's necessarily interested. But I note that TV producers, advertisers are worried that if Tom Brady's not in the Super Bowl, that then there won't be any interest.
Oh, no.
That there's, you know, 50 million people that only come in, watch the Super Bowl. They don't watch all the other football games, so that they're concerned. If Tom's not there, then
he's that big a draw.
Apparently so. That's what they think, anyway. So they're concerned that the ratings will be down if it's the Vikings and Jacksonville or...
Or is he just in that many commercials?
Maybe that's it could be. So, well, speaking of TV viewing, I noted that on this date in 1953, Lucy Ricardo gave birth to a baby boy on the I Love Lucy show, a record 68% of all television sets in the U.S. tune in for the event. So.
I believe that was a really big deal at the time.
Well, apparently so, yes. Yeah. So, anyway, we don't have anything quite that exciting. So, Bill likes to start the morning with maybe a proverb or two, and I've been trying to read through Proverbs. You know, there's 31 days in the month, so you read a proverb every day. I realized that maybe my days are a little off because I was reading Proverbs 18 this morning. It's like, oh, wait, it's the 19th. So, anyway, I'm a little behind, but I was reading
Proverbs. You have to allow for the leap year.
Sure, I'm going to accept that. Proverbs 18, I thought this was an interesting verse as we think about the conversations we'll have today. Fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. That you could think of a lot of news agencies, perhaps, that seem like they have that one. So, a person's words can be life-giving waters. Words of true wisdom are as refreshing as a bubbling brook. And I hope that that's the case during our time today. Intelligent people are always open to new ideas. In fact, they look for them. That's Proverbs 18:15. We will have the opportunity to look for new ideas and gain understanding and wisdom. And, of course, Proverbs 18... that familiar verse, I think we all know, the name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. And that is our hope and our confidence today, that no matter what comes our way, we've got a strong tower that we can run to and be safe. Thanks for tuning in. Carmen LaBerge joining us in a moment on the Early Morning Late Show. So it's 8 minutes, almost nine after the hour, the Early Morning Late Show on Friday morning. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. Glad to have you tuned in. And Carmen LaBerge on the line. Carmen, I don't know if I've ever found out, how did that end up being your walk-up music?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You guys picked
right.
it, and I like it. It's energizing, and yeah, it gets me enthused about coming on to talk.
Well, good. I don't know. Is there a story behind that, Rebecca, that I...
I'm pretty sure it was a suggestion from her friend and mine, John.
Okay. All right.
Who suggested that for Carmen.
John Wilkie.
Okay.
There you go.
Who's not here to defend himself.
There you go.
Carmen, I know that, football isn't the first thing on your mind, but around the upper Midwest, certainly Minnesota, kind of excited about this weekend and as we call it, the miracle in Minneapolis last week, pretty amazing. And I thought we should talk about, those... those moments when athletes have the opportunity to talk about what's important in their lives.
So the Minneapolis Miracle, you say, maybe is only something being talked about in Minnesota and surrounding regions. But in fact, it already has its own Wikipedia page. It already has a burgeoning, what I'll call swag empire. I, as you know, flew out of Minneapolis yesterday, and in the stores in the airport in Minneapolis, there are already T-shirts and sweatshirts and all kinds of paraphernalia that have the, you know, January 14, 2018 date on them, Miracle in Minneapolis. And so, you know, anything I think that gets labeled a miracle is instantly an opportunity for Christians to engage the conversation, because miracles are inherently supernatural. I mean, miracles put us in touch with the transcendent. But basically what we're saying is this goes beyond what is humanly possible. This goes beyond what humans could plan for, orchestrate, and achieve on their own. Clearly there was divine influence. Now, whether or not listeners are all willing, some might be rolling their eyes now saying, you know, God doesn't actually care that much about football, but that's probably a heretical speech for some right now. So I think that football actually does offer us an incredible opportunity right now to have some conversations with people in the culture who may otherwise be reticent to engage, you know, with a Christian in a conversation. And so take that opportunity. I think that Case Keenum gave folks, he actually showed us how to do it, maybe is the best way to put it.
Well, let's,
Rebecca, have you got some?
Yeah, let's listen to that clip, because after the game, you know, of course, there's always the microphone in the face and, you know, what are you thinking right now? And here's Case's response.
No words. You asked me about this moment, what this moment's meant to me. It's probably going to go down as the third best moment of my life, behind giving my life to Jesus Christ, marrying my wife, and this one's right there close.
There it is, the third best moment of his life.
Okay, so I love that. This is a guy who is obviously prepared over the course of time to give a ready defense for the hope that is in him. I mean, this is a First Peter moment for this young man. And he was quick to recognize this is actually not the greatest moment of my life. It's not even the second greatest moment of my life, but it is the third greatest moment of my life. And let me tell you what the first two are. Giving my life to Jesus Christ as my Savior and Lord still marks my life in a way that no other moment could ever mark my life. Marrying my wife, in his case, second greatest moment of my life. Other people might point to the birth of a child, but the reality is there are moments in our lives that make us who we are and mark us forever in ways that other moments don't. And so I would challenge listeners today to think about that. If today something happened in your life that puts you on the front page of the paper and Wikipedia suddenly said, we got to have a page on this, would you be prepared to recognize that no matter what it is, it's still not the greatest moment of your life? Like, the greatest moment of your life is the moment that you came to a knowledge of God's amazing grace for you in Jesus Christ, and you put your faith in him.
I was thinking we could certainly probably come up with the worst moments of our life maybe more quickly than the greatest moments, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And our list of the worst moments in our life are probably that's probably an issue of perspective. Right. So it's probably they're very circumstantial. And one of the things that I really appreciate about Case Keenum's answer is that the first two are really not circumstantial, regardless of whatever else is going on in his life, regardless of whether or not he won or lost that game, regardless of whether or not he wins or loses the Super Bowl. He will still be a child of God in Jesus Christ. And he will still be the husband of one woman who loves him, regardless of whether or not he wins or loses a game. And that's true for us. If we are in healthy, secure marriages where we are equally yoked with another believer, there's no circumstance of life that's going to tear us apart. And there's certainly no circumstance of life that's going to strip us out of the saving hand of the Lord our God.
By the way, you know, speaking of sports, using it as a platform, I think the studies say about, 90% of the the country is engaged or, you know, watching or participating in sports in one form or another at once a week. And so it's a great platform. And there's a group of coalitions, some 300 churches in the Twin Cities area that are looking to maximize some outreach opportunities during the Super Bowl when it comes here in a couple of weeks. And they've got Sports Spectrum magazine. You can find out more. There's some resources actually for churches. There's a 12-minute sort of a halftime video available, also 28-minute called Get in the Game. But if you go to getinthegame.net, you'll find out about all the opportunities. Getinthegame.net. And, you know, it's a great way to just have a big party and bring some friends and use it as an opportunity to share the gospel. And I like what you said, Carmen, the First Peter moment. That's just a good hook to hang on to. So, you know, all of us will have those opportunities at one time or another, I think.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the scripture basically says so, right? We need to be prepared to have a ready defense, to share with other people. It's not that we're defensive, but to share with other people, why we are the way we are, why we talk the way we talk, why we think the way we think, and why we do what we do. I do think that redeeming aspects of big games like a Super Bowl, I think that the ministries that you're talking about that are providing opportunities for people in their own homes, I don't want my kids to watch the halftime show. And so utilizing a resource that's being provided to redeem that time, particularly that halftime show time, is really important for Christians to prepare in advance for what you're going to do during halftime of the Super Bowl and what the eyes that are in your household are going to have access to during those particular moments.
Getinthegame.net is the website. Carmen LeBurge on with us this morning in the Early Morning Late Show. We're going to talk about events going on this weekend, not sports related. The March for Life coming up. Also, we'll talk about the president's health because everybody else is. We'll get to Carmen's perspective in a couple of minutes here. It's 17 past the hour. Past the hour on a Friday morning, early morning late show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. And around the country, upper Midwest, going through a little warming, kind of a little January thaw. We love it. Some thawing in Connecticut, creating some problems there. The Connecticut River's got ice choking it off there. In fact, they're sending in the Coast Guard cutter trying to break through the ice. They're concerned about some flooding there. And in parts of the South, it's like below 40 degrees, and so kids aren't even allowed to go outside. Carmen, you're experiencing some of that, right, in the schools in your neighborhood?
So we have some rules in the South in our public schools that will definitely shock your listeners. And so, like, they're not allowed to go outside for physical education during the school year if it's under 40 degrees. And so I know your listeners are saying, our children would never go outside. There would never be a time during the school year where kids were allowed to play outside. So maybe not surprisingly, although we were off for MLK Day, we've also been off all week here in Middle Tennessee because of snow and ice. Now, I obviously drove to and from the airport, and everybody else is driving around, but schools are closed. And so it's an interesting I think it's interesting to remember that there are reasons that our educational systems are governed very locally, because what makes sense in Middle Tennessee right now would absolutely not make sense in anywhere that folks are listening to us live on Faith Radio.
You know, good-hearted people, just, you know, that probably not based on necessarily solid data, right, so that it's not safe to go out if it's under 40.
Right, and I think that the reality is, you know, kids here only have coats when it's incredibly urgent to have them, and they don't take them to school unless it's already really cold. And so if temperature drops in the middle of the day, they don't want to be responsible for sending kids out into what they would experience as, you know, extreme cold. So it's all a matter of perspective and frankly, how thin our blood has become.
Well, speaking of perspective, do you have any thoughts on the media obsession over President Trump's clean bill of health? Because basically he's fine, but there was an awful lot of concern and angst over if that's really true.
Well, no, I think that one thing folks are going to see is, you know, for a doctor to say, you know, well, you know, this person actually has good genes. And part of the reality is that his lifestyle choices haven't been able to trump's genes. And so doctors don't like, well, and other people who just don't like the person, they don't like that kind of information. And they certainly don't like that kind of science-based factual information. And so you're going to see a lot of spin about, you know, well, he does all these things that are certainly detrimental to his health, but his health is obviously very good. And we want to celebrate that. We certainly want the president of the United States to be a person who is robust and healthy. And there's absolutely, I think, Neil, one of the things that surprises me is why would you be advocating that a person be found not to be healthy? Like what's going on when what we're always looking for is something bad, something negative? My sister would describe it as the pepper. Like, don't always be looking for the pepper. Be looking for the salt. And certainly as Christians, we want to be people who always season our conversations with salt. And we want to be people who are experienced as salty, not in a sailor, the way sailors talk kind of way, but in the way that Jesus calls us to be the salt of the earth.
I guess it seemed like we recall back in the days, Bill Clinton enjoyed his cheeseburgers and desserts, and it just didn't seem like it made quite that much news. So these are interesting days where obsession seems to be the driving force, and no matter what the news story is.
Well, and those two men that you just mentioned, Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, are almost exactly the same age, and obviously the years have not affected those two men in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And so we certainly need to be praying for our former president, and we certainly need to be praying for the current president of the United States. No matter how we feel about him, no matter whether or not we agree or disagree with everything he says or tweets, we absolutely need to be advocating before the Lord that he be kept healthy and that he be a man of discernment and righteous thought, because he is the leader of the free world. He's going to speak today at the March for Life, and I want people to be praying for that event and everybody involved in that as well.
Well, that's, in fact, the first sitting president to address that event, right?
It is, this word gets thrown around a lot in relationship to this president, but it is genuinely unprecedented that a sitting president would address the March for Life. I would ask listeners, this is the way I'm going to be approaching my time in relationship to the March for Life. I want people to be praying that the president would say things that actually affirm the pro-life movement holistically. Pro-life people recognize that the pro-life movement is about those of us who are reborn advocating for the preborn, but it is also a much broader movement than that. It is not just about abortion. It is about being pro-life for the flourishing of human beings, no matter where they live at every stage of life, from conception to natural death. And so your pro-life issue may be that you have a special needs child. Your pro-life issue may be that you're a single mom. Your pro-life issue may be that you have a parent suffering from dementia. Your pro-life issue is real for you, and it's deep, and it's of concern. And so don't let today be characterized just as anti-abortion. Let it be characterized genuinely as pro-life.
March for Life going on, and, of course, a number of events, Evangelicals for Life having their meeting this weekend as well. So it's a significant time in D.C. in terms of advancing the cause of life.
Absolutely. And you're going to hear a lot of media covering the march tomorrow, which is a resistance march on the one-year anniversary of the president's inauguration. Today's march will get a different kind of media coverage, and that's an opportunity for Christians to jump into the conversations of the day. When people start talking more about a march that's, you know, only 2 years old and is against a particular president, we got to be people who chime in and say, hey, the March for Life is going on for a really long time, and it's advocating something really positive. Let's talk about the March for Life, not just this 2-year-old March for Resistance that's going to happen tomorrow.
Carmen, always good to talk with you, and we appreciate the bonus Carmen this week. It was great to have you in studio for fill in for Bill, and great to talk with you this morning.
Thanks. I loved it. Talk to you soon, Neil.
All right. Carmen LeBurge, host of The Reconnect. He's author and with us as a regular feature here on the Early Morning Late Show. Brings us to 26 past the hour, and there's more to come. We got a little bit of laughter coming up here from Ken Davis in just a moment. Here in about 15 minutes, Alex McFarland joins us. We're going to talk about, among other things, in defense of your local pastor, some encouragement for those that are preparing sermons and doing all that important work. All that's ahead today in the Early Morning Late Show. Ken Davis talking about the levels of communication. By the way, strategic communication through writing is what we're going to be focusing on coming up this summer again. It's our second annual Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. It's coming in July, and registrations are already open. If you've had the bug, maybe, or the prompting to become a writer, just to do that, learn more about it. You can be inspired. The best-selling author and inspirational speaker Sheila Walsh will be the keynote. You'll learn from some of the industry experts during breakout sessions and also valuable one-on-one appointments with faculty members available. So register now. It's coming in July. The University of Northwestern St. Paul, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. is the website, NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. I'd encourage you to be a part of the Writers Conference coming up this summer. Make plans for it now and see what God will do in the years ahead. Speaking of writing, we've got writer and apologist and theologian Alex McFarland joining us in about 10 minutes. Stay tuned. That is so true. Your prayer and support, so encouraging to us and vital. So thank you. And you know, if you're new to Faith Radio, welcome aboard. Whether you want to find out more about us, you can request a free welcome pack, which is a great little resource at all sorts of wonderful information about Faith Radio. You can sign up for that online and go to myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. Alex McFarland coming up in a few minutes. We've got some thoughts from Jim Garlow about the bias against Christianity. We'll get to that in a minute, but you know, lots of things that can cause, well, the lack of joy, let's put it that way, as we consider the news events of the day. Well, Rob Morgan, pastor and author, has written on choosing joy. And he says, you know, if you're struggling with your circumstances today and are possibly feeling depressed, Rob Morgan has a word of hope just for you.
We just can't stay down in a place of depression. And I've battled, most of us have at least battled low-grade depression. And it can just pull you under. And sometimes you just have to stand up on your feet and quote Scripture and say, the joy of the Lord is my strength. It's not always found in the circumstances. It's not always found in the way that we may feel physically or what may be happening in our lives. But the joy of the Lord is our strength. And there is just something very powerful about that verse. And in this book, The Strength You Need, I tell the whole story of how Nehemiah and Ezra and the people of Jerusalem in that day began to experience that for themselves, and the exuberance that came over them as they decided they weren't going to mourn anymore. They were going to choose to be joyful, and that gave them strength.
Choosing joy. It is a choice. It's a great resource from Rob Morgan called The Strength You Need, the name of his book. And you can hear that full interview. You search for it online on myfaithradio.com. You can look for joy or choice or Rob Morgan or The Strength You Need, and you'll find some encouragement today at myfaithradio.com. Rob Morgan's just a wonderful pastor. We're going to talk with pastor, apologist, and theologian in defense of pastors. Alex McFarland is up in a moment.
Examples of anti-Christian bias in our educational system number in the thousands. An overstatement? No way. This is Jim Garlow. Take, for example, in Texas, high school cheerleaders were sued for displaying Bible verses on their banners and posters. A high school football coach put on administrative leave for praying on the field with his players, voluntarily. Students in New York prohibited from even forming a Christian club. Clearly, one of the biggest spiritual wars in our culture is the battle in our schools for the very hearts and minds of our children. This blindness to the eternal value of faith can only be for one purpose, to knowingly or unknowingly try to turn an impressionable child away from a faith that saves and points to an ultimate accountability and that our nation ignores to its own detriment. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
22 before the hour, the early morning late show is underway. It's Friday. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold today. And speaking of the battle of ideas, Alex McFarland, an apologist and theologian, has been engaging in the battle of ideas for many years. I always appreciate having him on the early morning late show. And Alex, good morning. Welcome. Good to have you on again.
Well, it's great to be on. Thank you for having me.
You know, you wrote recently about in defense of your local pastor. You know, you have a real heart for the local church. And it was an interesting article just to suggest that maybe pastors aren't highly regarded as they should be. Say more about that.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, you know, there was a poll. The Gallup organization put out a poll that said among, you know, 20 professional vocations, pastors ranked ninth on the list of trustworthiness or respect. Number one was nurses. 82% of people respected nurses. But for really 30 years, the I guess you could say assumed trustworthiness of pastors has been going down. And so LifeZet.com, which is a faith and values website, in some way it's associated with Fox News. I don't know the exact connection, but LifeZet asked me to write an article about why the esteem for pastors was going down. So that's what that article was about. We talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I guess we could all probably think there's some ideas, and maybe just in general that culture has probably not as high regard for, you know, there's not sort of the strong cultural Christianity perhaps that there was a couple decades ago. But are there other sure. reasons, you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Shortly after I became a Christian in the mid-80s, a lot of people will remember there were a number of very high-profile scandals that, you know, unfolded. And, you know, that's bad. In no way do I minimize, you know, how serious it is when any pastor falls into sin, or especially high-profile pastors. But all the late-night comedians began to make fun of the ministers, and you know, it seemed like scandal after scandal erupted for, you know, the next 25 years. And when media coverage of pastors focused on some of these scandals, you know, it was pretty incriminating for the church. And what I found in speaking at universities, as I do, I'm in front of a lot of secular audiences, the perception of the church, the perception of ministers, has just been, you know, pretty negative. And, you know, now we're a couple of generations into American adults who weren't raised in church. You know, there were a lot of people in the 80s and 90s that, you know, maybe they didn't go to church or really didn't identify as Christian, but they had been to church maybe as a child, and they had a degree of reverence for the things of God. But, you know, I will say there are a lot of people out there in the world now that just have flat-out contempt for Christianity, or what they might call, quote, organized religion. So we've got, you know, an image to try and rebuild, because, number one, these people need the gospel. These people need Jesus Christ. And, you know, the truth is, though, I wrote this article to say that, you know, while there have been some ministers that fell, you know, I've spoken in 2,200 churches, actually more than 2,200 different churches, and I quit counting a couple of years ago. My publicist wanted to know, how many churches have you been in? And we tallied up over the last 20 years. And it's been my privilege to be in all sorts of churches, Protestant, Catholic, rural, urban, you know, big churches, small churches, contemporary, traditional. I can say, I believe with all my heart, having been around the block a lot, 99.9% of all the ministers out there are really good, selfless, you know, committed people. There have been some scandals, but, you know, so many pastors are the ones that get up at 4 a.m. and they go to pray with a parishioner who's going into surgery, and they travel and they take meals to shut-ins, and they frequently pay for it out of their own pocket. And most of the ministers of the, you know, 250,000 churches in America are part, you know, pastor, scholar, counselor, administrator, accountant, groundskeeper, math tutor, mechanic, all-around handyman. And they're just some of the most exemplary giving people you would ever meet. And so, you know, I know that we have to, you know, project an image worth following in the minds of unsaved people. We have to earn people's trust. But, you know, for the pastors out there that are working hard and pouring out their lives for God and for their, you know, people and for this country, you know, we should give them a pat on the back.
Well, I want, you know, it's one thing to, you know, be esteemed in the eyes of the world. I guess it's another, maybe among, you know, the flock, right? The fellowship that should be honoring pastors. Are there some things perhaps that we could do? Are we maybe partly at fault for not honoring and caring for our pastors as much as we should?
Well, you know, a word of encouragement goes a long way. And I do think that a lot of pastors feel underappreciated. And obviously, and I've pastored two churches also along the journey, and you know, we're doing what we're doing for the Lord. And, you know, 1 Corinthians 15:58 says that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. So what we do for the Lord. But everybody out there, you know, we're humans. We like an attaboy, you know. And I would encourage people, say a word of encouragement to your pastor. You know, behind the smile and behind the facade, it may be that their heart is really heavy. And just a word of encouragement would be a real shot of adrenaline to their soul, you know, because the fact is, when the chips are down, we need our local clergy, we need our pastors. And I know there are a lot of media ministries out there, and everybody loves Billy Graham and Dr. Dobson, and those guys are great, and so many others. But if your family is in a crisis, or if you're, you know, in a bereaved and you lose a loved one, you can't call Dr. Dobson, or you can't call Charles Stanley or David Jeremiah. And I love those guys. I've met those guys many times. But it's the local pastor. It's the local shepherd of the flock that we lean on when we are in the crucible of life's experiences. So support your local pastor and pray for him and thank God for him.
I mean, if the statistics are anywhere near true, I mean, a number of pastors, leaving, month by month. And so, this is an area where we, if we're involved in the local church at all, we ought to be saying, how can we make sure that our pastors are encouraged and equipped to do the job God's called them to do?
Yeah. And let me just say this, you know, and thank you, by the way, thank you for giving me kind of a soapbox to talk about this a little bit. I've worked for a number of organizations and been a consultant for a lot of organizations. Really, the two foundational points of our nation really are the home and the church. I mean, tell me the state of the family, the state of the church, and I will tell you the future of the nation, really. And so the church is a very key thing and has been one of the secrets to America's greatness. I mean, de Tocqueville, in the early 19th century, when he wrote his famous two-volume set, Democracy in America, you know, Alexis de Tocqueville talked about how the church and the pulpits aflame with righteousness were part of the secret of America's greatness. Okay, so what I would say to the churches out there, support your pastor, pray, thank God for your pastor. Is he perfect? No, of course not. But let me say, there are so many churches that don't have a pastor. And I would encourage churches, take care of your pastor. You know, you're not in the ministry to get rich, obviously, but give them a living wage. Give them enough that they can put tires on the car when they need to, because there's enough stress anyway in the ministry. And what I have found, as I said earlier, most of the pastors out there are so selfless and willing to serve. They're exemplary. They're not asking for, you know, more than they should have, but they do need enough that they can take care of their families. And thanks for giving me a chance to talk about this.
Dr. Alex McFarland is a religion and culture expert, director of Christian Worldview and Apologetics at North Greenville University, and he's our guest on a regular basis here in the Early Morning Late Show. And we're going to take a quick little break and come back and have Alex tell us a little story of an event that happened about 20 years ago. Speaking of churches and pastors, we'll get to that just ahead. 10 minutes before top of the hour, the early morning late show is underway. Dr. Alex McFarland is a regular guest here on the broadcast. He's a religion and culture expert and director of the Christian Worldview and Apologetics at North Greenville University, and has written a number of books, and wrote not too long ago about the power of Christians United. And we were talking, Alex, in the past about, you know, pastors, supporting our pastors, but there's something about believers and churches coming together as well. And you had an experience, what, some 20 years ago that was a good illustration of that.
Oh, well, thanks. And by the way, it's great to be on. I so appreciate Faith Radio and the vital work you guys do. But, you know, I had not been a believer too long, and I was going to a church, the church where I had found Christ. I was going to a Bible study and, you know, got saved when I was a college student. But there was a men's outing to help try and rebuild a church that had been burned. And so I went along with a group of men for this construction project, and we got in a van and rode to a place where a little church out in the country had burned down. And I was pretty new to, you know, Christianity, but, you know, clearly out in this rural area, this little church had been sort of the hub of the community. Well, a lot of groups of different churches that were Methodist and Baptist and different ones had showed up, and we'd get there early on a Saturday morning, and the foundation of the sanctuary was there, and I was just listening, and the church had had a clothes closet for, you know, needy people and a food pantry, and the church had been a place where when in an ice storm and the power was out, you know, people could stay because they had a generator. Well, anyway, we clean, we work, they start putting in a floor, they go walls. And by the time we left about 10 p.m. that night, you know, we'd been there, I don't know, 16, 17 hours, I guess. I mean, there was a church, you know, there was still some details to finish. And I was just, you know, as a, you know, 20-something new believer, I was just in awe that in one day, you know, like 100 men and boys built a building. And I thought about it for years. And then, you know, after traveling, and I've seen so many great initiatives in communities where when Christians unite, there's prayer, there's, you know, neighborhood watches, there's outreach and evangelism, there's, you know, ministries to the poor and things like that. And here we are in a time in American life when it is more urgent than ever to rise to the challenge of John 17 and be one, be united. Because we still, you know, we hear so much about how the country's falling apart. But according to Barna, of you know, adult Christians, there probably are somewhere 65 million on the low side to maybe 100 maybe 130 million adults that actually really have a relationship with Christ. And in terms of, you know, prayer, revival, evangelism, even legislation, I mean, standing up for religious freedom, standing up for morality, could you imagine? Let's take the low number, 65 million adults that really do believe in Jesus Christ. Could you imagine if we actually linked arms and worked together? I mean, we could have anything we wanted in terms of, you know, defending the family, defending life, religious freedom. If we were to unite in prayer and in a unified voice, this country would look a whole lot different.
Alex, I was thinking, I know you've written a lot about, you know, the new generation, and have a special place in your heart for you know, today's young people, and it seems like they are much more inclined to want to be collaborative and about relationships maybe than previous generations. So we're missing an opportunity if we don't advance that.
Yeah, I mean, millennials and younger have a great work ethic, and they have a great you know, ethic of service when it comes to, you know, digging wells or you know, human relief. What millennials need a little help with, though, is oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes is theology, that really the Bible is our authority. And, you know, the Bible is clear. Jesus is the one and only Savior. And so with millennials and younger, you know, I don't want them to be, you know, just people that serve but are essentially universalists. I mean, We give a cup of cold water, but we give it in Jesus' name. And so while young people have a real sense of empathy a lot of times, I want them to equally have a sense of truth, and that truth is Jesus Christ and His Word. That's why, you know, I want to give a plug for an event we do called Truth for a New Generation. We've been doing this for a lot of years. The next TNG event, we call it TNG, Truth for a New Generation. It's coming up in March in North Carolina. Josh McDowell, Todd Starnes from Fox News, J. Warner Wallace, we've got a whole slate of world-class speakers. And whenever we do these Truth for a New Generation events, we talk about, you know, not only knowing the gospel, you know, evangelizing people, but being salt and light in the culture. And so I would encourage people, go to our website, truthforanewgeneration.com. Do like people usually come from about 30 states. Come to this event and get equipped to change the world.
We love it, Alex. Thank you for joining us. We got to run, but check out truthfornewgeneration.com, and we look forward to having you on next time here on the Early Morning Late Show.
God bless you. It's always an honor. Thank you.
It's been a great start to the morning. Faith, hope, and clarity all in the mix. Thanks to Carmen LaBerge and Alex McFarland, the regular guests here on the Early Morning Late Show. A great hour coming up. Next hour, Chris Martin, the millennial evangelical, will be a part of the morning and get some great insight from him. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bible reading plan, how you're doing on your get through the Bible in a year reading plan, or maybe you have another plan. We'll talk about it coming up next hour, as well as we're going to meet Afshin Ziafat, who has a heart for the people of Persia, his native land of Iran. We'll get an update on that and more as the Early Morning Late Show continues.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.